It was striking. The crisp outline hugging breasts and hips, which we usually saw only through the contoured drapery of a cousin's wrap. The deep blue of the suit fabric enhanced the subtle amber underglow of Kosala's deep Indian skin, and the extra height exaggerated her tall, imperious beauty. The long chin, long nose, and high forehead, which make her face commanding and otherworldly, almost stylized, like a mask or statue staring down at you from some lofty other realm. I hate speaking in this dome. I can never tell if someone else is talking over me or if it's just the echo. No one was talking, Vivian assured. I think most of them were actually listening. Not me, of course. She gave her spouse a mock shove, then saw the crowd of servicers approaching. Oh, hello there, name, name, name. I cannot list my comrades' names here. Chair Kosala herself, as service program director, has censored them. I won't ask if you liked it, since you're bound to say you did. But tell me, was my diction clear on tax bracket back taxing? I always muddle that. My comrades were staring at the faces, so often seen on newscasts, now abruptly real. I don't remember, Chair Kosala, I answered honestly. If it had been conspicuous, I would remember. She did not have a smile from Mycroft Canner. What is it? You're all staring at Vivian as if something's supposed to happen. The least timid of them answered, The censor promised us ice cream. What? Only ice cream? No hot fudge or whipped cream or strawberries? We can't have that. Vivian rolled his eyes. Chair Kosala reached to comb his dreadlocks with her long fingers, not because the locks were actually must, but because she still enjoys the feel of them. Be sparing with the Romanovan budget, dear, not ours. Come on, everyone. Vivian's getting us super deluxe sundaes. Cheers drowned the censor's choking groan. Terry Kirabo, you come too. She called the actors over. Your Majesty, would you care to join us? The King of Spain smiled across at us from near the podium. Thank you, Chair Kosala, but no. I have another obligation. Mycroft! For privacy's sake, he addressed me in Spanish. Did La Tremouille summon you to the party tonight? I replied in Spanish. Yes, Your Majesty, they did. What excuse did they give? A very flimsy one, Your Majesty. Not worth repeating. Spain frowned. I spoke to Jade Mason about this invasion of the Sanir Weeksbooth Bash. Of course, His Majesty did not say Jed Mason, but as I approximate Spanish with English, so I substitute the name you recognize for one you would not. They see more in this than just a prank. Then I believe it, I answered. Thank you for broaching the question. Someone had to. Yes. Until tonight, Mycroft. I bobbed my slouching bow. Until tonight, Your Majesty. Chair Kosala and the censor watched as Spain graced me with his words, but they would not intrude. As for my fellow servicers, most here knew me well enough not to be surprised, and the rest would mistake me for a Spaniard. An aide came now and offered the cousin chair sane shoes in trade for her costume heels. To the Sunday bar, she cried, and strode down the aisle like Athena before her armies, bodyguards holding the flanks like victories. She usually has at least 4 guards, though on this crowded day I spotted 10, glad of their numbers as the convicts schooled around their ward. I did not follow the happy band of princes and paupers, united here by the magic of sugar and cream. Only Su Hyun noticed that I lagged behind. Mycroft, you coming? I'll catch up. We have only honored 4 of our heroes today. I should pay my respects to the rest before departing. Hearing my reason, Su Hyun joined me. We visited each tomb around the dome in turn, rereading epitaphs, admiring busts, and contemplating the many different human foundation blocks which formed our world. It was somewhat satisfying, but only somewhat. Jung Soo-hyung Anseulae Kosala is a good person, a worthy successor to the censor and deserving of a place on a legitimate 710 list someday. But Soo-hyun, like you, reader, would not have understood if I explained that the grave I most wished to honor was not there in the Pantheon. Chapter the Ninth. Every Soul That Ever Died. Thisbe, I love you. Go away or I'll call the police. We have something special here, Thisbe, something eternal. I know you felt it too, that night on the cliffs. How can you throw that away? We don't have anything. You have an obsession. Now leave, and if I ever catch you around here again, I'll have one of my Basibs break both your kneecaps. You're torturing me, Thisbe. You brought this on yourself. I can't live without you. Then go away and die. The witch swept in through the front door of the Bash House with a bounce in her gait and a smile on her lips as if she had a mouthful of chocolate truffle. Did I forget to tell you Thisbe is a witch? I know you won't believe me, but she is. A real witch. Mistress of secret hexes that can warp the soul into whatever parody she wills. Did you not see on first meeting how her first impulse was to steal Carlyle's memory with her pill potions? That was a witch's instinct, as is the pride she takes here in a discarded lover's pain. You find it strange that I trusted a witch to guard Bridger? I would not bring any normal child to her, but for Bridger, Thisbe was the perfect guardian. To Thisbe, every secret from her brother's security passwords to my name is another chapter for her spellbook arsenal, and Bridger is the greatest spell of all. Hi, Leslie. Thisbe beamed as she entered the living room and found slouched in the comfort of the sofa her dear... Actually, it is difficult to decide whether to call Leslie Thisbe's Basib or her Bash mate, since adopted Leslie is not a Basib born in Thisbe's Bash, but neither is she a Bash mate chosen in adulthood. Either way, Thisbe smiles on her like family. Oh, and Carlyle, you're here too, good. She nodded to the sensei, who had made a nest of cushions on the sofa opposite. Sorry to keep you waiting. I'm sure you want to get our session done so you can get back to the festivities. Leslie scooted forward on the sofa, ruining the doodles her fingertip had traced into the plush. Is Holly stalking you again? No, this is a new one. I'll handle it. Thisbe's fast fingers pulled the pins from her hair and let its black torrent tumble free from the prison of a professional clip. Did everything arrive for the barbecue? Yes. Though I can't imagine how the nine of us are supposed to eat all that in one day. What are the twins growing in the meat maker, a whole bison? Leslie rose and offered Carlyle a hand up from the couch, whose down soft foam threatened to trap him in its comfort. Thanks for the session. Another the Tuesday after next? 3 o'clock, he verified. Thisbe took the least squished fig from the still too full bowl on the side table. Wait, you two just had a session? Carlyle smiled. Yes, but I don't mind doing another right away. You're not too tired? He shook his head. I do it all the time. Thisbe chuckled. Quite the voker, aren't you? Carlyle beamed. Shall we? Thisbe led Carlyle downstairs to the darkness of her bedroom, which showed no sign of Dominic's intrusion. But she did not stop there. Stepping out instead into the wildflower trench. Are you taking me to them? Carlyle felt the need to whisper it. To Bridger? Yes. Carlyle tiptoed behind her, savoring the song of insects, the buffeting of grass fluff aglow with slanting sun. To an expert, his delight in the book of nature might betray something of Carlyle's own beliefs, which his sensei's vows forbid him to discuss. But I will not strip him naked yet. Eavesdropping through Thisbe's tracker, I caught the warning whistle of the lookout as the soldiers spotted the approaching pair. But I doubt that a child of peace like Carlyle could differentiate all clear from birdsong. Welcome, Carlyle, Thisbe. Thanks for coming out on a holiday. It was the Major's voice, seasoned and powerful, like an old piano which sounds better than new ones because it's yours. Thisbe spotted the soldiers, assembled in an upside-down plastic bucket with chips of wood as benches pulled close around a small block draped like a banquet table. No problem, Major. I brought something special today. All right, three cheers for Thisbe. Set it here. Thisbe drew a small box from her pocket and from it unpacked a tiny banquet in colored clay. Cheeses, salami, French bread, pea-sized apples and peaches, a tiny roast fowl with the brown and green speckles of stuffing painted around the edge, milk, wine bottles with tiny intricate labels, plates of cookies and croissants, even a three-tiered wedding cake 2 centimeters tall. Look at all that grub. You're a goddess of plenty, Thisbe. Thisbe basked in their thanks as she set out the tiny meal. Most of the food was not quite to scale with the soldiers, apples the size of volleyballs in their arms, the wine bottles standing higher than the knees of the men who struggled to stand them upright, but it was close enough. Lieutenant Aymer smiled up at Carlyle. We usually eat ordinary food, and sawing hunks off a giant strawberry or eating a gingerbread house from inside out is every bit as fun as you'd imagine, but sometimes one just wants to break bread like a normal person. Carlyle's eyes were bright with wonder as he leaned low over the bucket. I can understand that. Where's Bridger? Looking at a nest of baby birds. The Major pointed to some brush nearby, where the boy crouched, half hidden by the stems. As when a mountain climber on some cloud-locked peak grows so weary that he forgets the world around him in the pain and pull and pain and pull, aware of nothing but his muscles, fog, and stone. But then suddenly a bright wind sweeps the clouds aside, and there open the boundless blue heavens, the sentinel heads of mountains thrusting through the fog floor, and the climber gasps as he sees, sovereign up above, the terrible, all-giving sun. So Carlyle gasped at the sight of Bridger. And so he should. So should we all. Have they? He whispered when his breath returned. Did they make their decision yet? Whether to bring back the one who died?
They wanted to talk to you first.
Carlyle's pale brows arched in wonder at the brave patience of this little boy. One question for you first.
Just one?
The Major teased. One above all. Can you tell me whether this is Bridger's first taste of death? The first time one of the animated toys has died? Apart from the person in the photograph, I heard about that. A veteran's sigh is always heavy.
No. But this is the first time since Bridger was old enough to understand. There were men from both sides in the soldier playset. When he first animated us, we didn't understand what was going on. There were some casualties in the minutes before we managed to spot the giant 3-year-old in the sky and call a truce. Back then, Bridger didn't know enough of the world to understand resurrection, and we didn't manage to keep the corpses.
You fought each other?
Green versus yellow.
The Major nodded to Stander Y, who still wore the desert beige of the opposing force.
The world has seen more causeless wars.
Carlyle's brow furrowed in sympathy.
We all remember our war, the Major continued. The rage of it, the cities, families that never quite existed. My men are eager to talk to you too. But they've waited this long and can wait longer. It's the boy that matters most.
He turned and shouted toward the brush.
Bridger! Come, it's time.
Bridger rose from the bushes and approached, his clothing studded with chaff and seeds. Did I not describe him properly before? His clothes were almost as loose as a cousin's, a rough woven child's wrap with broad blue stripes, oversized enough for his hands to hide in the frayed sleeves.